Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Jim Kilroy, bar number 20872, and I represent the appellant Nathan Dunlap. The simple issue presented in this appeal is whether the Colorado Department of Corrections, which of course is an agency of the executive branch of the state of Colorado, is permitted to issue a rule establishing secret procedures for carrying out the death penalty by lethal injection without any public input whatsoever. We know that in June of 2011, the CDOC, the Department of Corrections, issued AR-314. They call it an administrative regulation, but it was and is the rule that establishes how death row inmates are going to be executed. AR-314 was undeniably passed unilaterally by the Department of Corrections with no public participation, no normal rulemaking, which is typically required when state agencies establish rules under the Administrative Procedures Act, which I'll refer to as the APA.
You already referred to this as a secret regulation. The brief refers to it, I think, as secret regulations or something like that. But it's not secret. I mean, it's public. This regulation is publicly available. Your concern is whether the public should have input to the drafting of the regulation. Isn't that really the issue before us? It's not an issue of secrecy, but it's an issue of public input.
That's the primary issue, Judge Richmond. The primary issue is the gravamen of our complaint is that the rule was established with no rulemaking, with no public participation, no hearings, no consideration of evidence, and so forth. As it turns out, on top of the fact that this AR-314 is a product of unilateral action as opposed to public rulemaking, it also is, in fact, a secret document. It refers in the body of the text to a restricted access document.
There is a document that is of restricted distribution.
Correct.
It's not this regulation itself, but just that part K of it that refers to a restricted distribution document.
I think that's fair. I think the district court, I'm not sure the district court was clear on this, but as I understood the district court's opinion, it analyzed both AR-314 and separately the restricted access document, whatever it is, as rules. One could say that one incorporated the other, or they're two different rules. The point is, neither is the product of rulemaking. The latter, the restricted access document, is undeniably anything but transparent.
If it even exists.
If it even exists.
We don't know if it exists, do we?
Correct. This lawsuit, we know that Mr. Dunlap filed a lawsuit to invalidate AR-314, again, because the DOC did not follow rulemaking procedures. The DOC, CDOC, came back with a citation and invocation of an exemption 17.1.111. That's going to be the focus of my argument. I have to give you a statutory construction analysis, I think, of that particular statute. The district court agreed with the DOC and dismissed Mr. Dunlap's claim for failure of subject matter jurisdiction, essentially finding that the exemption did protect the DOC from establishing rules through the normal rulemaking process that's required of all state agencies. Now, I have to get into statutory construction, but before getting there, I do think it's important to see what got us here. 30 years ago, as we go through our opening brief, when the exemption was a bill, the CDOC reassured the General Assembly and said, we need this exemption because there's a rash of expensive technical inmate lawsuits and we need exemption from APA rulemaking requirement because it's too expensive for us to deal with. What's not happening, the DOC said at the time, 30 years ago, is we're not intending to prevent regulations from being considered substantively on their merits. And what we're not doing is trying to create a shroud of secrecy for the DOC. Now here we are, fast forward 30 years later, and AR-314, to answer your earlier question, is enveloped in a shroud of secrecy, and the position that the DOC is taking and the district court adopted is that there's not even judicial review. There's no meaningful review of the rule through the normal APA judicial review requirements. Going to the statutory construction, the first, I think, important thing to keep in mind is that the general rule we know is that state agencies must follow APA rulemaking, and that's a good thing. They have to have they have to give prospective information to interested to the public to determine if there's an interest in the public giving either data, argument, evidence, one way or the other, that reflects on how the rule should end up. That's the normal process. That leads to a evidentiary hearing, an opportunity for folks not just to present written evidence, but to make argument. That leads to a required consideration by the agency of this public input, which in turn leads to a published rule, which in turn is subject to judicial review under the APA. That's the normal course. We're talking about an exception here, and I think it's critical to point out at the outset that exceptions, as a basic matter of statutory construction, are supposed to be read narrowly. It's the exception that's supposed to be read narrowly, not the general rule.
Counsel, we have to read an exception only as narrowly as the language of the statute permits. The statute contains broad language. We can't ignore broad language. We have to interpret it in accordance with its plain meaning.
That's true. I accept that.
Okay.
I don't like to quote during oral argument, but it's such a short statute, I think we need to do this. 17.111, let me just read it. This is the exemption that's been invoked and adopted. The provisions of this title relating to the placement, assignment, management, discipline, and classification of inmates shall not be subject to 24.4.103, 105, or 106. We contend that the district court erred in finding that this exemption exempted the CDOC from rulemaking for two reasons that are completely independent of each other. The first is that reference to provisions of this title. The exemption applies to provisions of this title, and in this case, the enabling statute that gave the CDOC the authority to issue the rule that we're talking about did not come from this title. It did not come from Title 17. It came from Title 18. Separate and apart, if the court determines, as the district court did otherwise, that in fact, even though it says on its face, AR 314 is the product of Title 18, even if this court determines on a de novo basis that in fact it was the product of Title 17, it still, for the exemption to apply, has to apply to provisions that relate to the placement, assignment, management, discipline, and classification of inmates. So we have two independent reasons that this exemption should not apply. I want to spend a little more time on the first one and reiterate what I just said.
Doesn't Title 18 delegate, you said you're brief, Title 18 delegates to the executive director of the CDOC the responsibility to carry it out.
Yes.
17 then has provisions for the general ways that the executive director functions.
Yes.
And then the regulation says that 111 says anything that he does under 17 is exempt, is, if it's management, is exempt. I mean, is there a link? There has to be one more step between the authorization by the legislature of the death penalty infliction statute and the actual carrying out, which is the general responsibilities of the director of the DOC. That's the authority under which he perhaps, probably, I think he could compile this or issue this regulation. I know it cites to the lethal injection statute, but certainly there's the way he did it, the reason he did it was because he has general authority to manage the DOC.
Your Honor, I would take issue with that. Let me, you just referred to this, but so we're clear, the best evidence of the source of AR 314 is the document that the DOC itself generated, and it unequivocally states under legal authority, page 2, 5 times, that it's the product of Title 18, and in particular 18.1.3.1204. If you look at the body of AR 314, where we talk about the very cursory rules related to inmate access to family members and so forth, that comes directly out of 18.1.3.1205. So the document itself says this is a product of Title 18. To answer your, I think, implicit question, or at least as I understood it, the DOC was right. I mean, that we didn't get lucky that they cited Title 18 as the source of AR 314. It is. Nothing in Title 17 refers to death penalty. There's references throughout to the management of institutional facilities, custodial facilities, to operations of the department, but for 1.3.1204, however, the executive director of the CEOC would not have had any legal authority to implement death penalty by lethal injection. If he did, why did the General Assembly add that to the statute?
Counsel, I guess to answer that question, every adult sentence comes from Title 18, every one. And every adult sentence has to be carried out by the director of the Department of Corrections. And in doing so, the director issues rules, makes policies as to where sentences will be carried out, under what conditions they will be carried out, etc. It seems like your argument is that none of those regulations are subject to the exception in 17.1.111 because, after all, the sentence came from Title 18, and that's the director's authority to even imprison these people.
Well, I've looked through Title 18, and I don't see anything equivalent to what we have in 18.1.3.1204. I don't see references to independent duties that the executive director of the DOC has on any level. It's an anomaly. It's stuck right in the middle of Title 18, and there's specific references to things that the executive director needs to do. I would submit it's there because he didn't have the authority under Title 17, and that's why the legislature put it where it is. This title, as another sort of tenet of statutory construction, is we give plain meaning to statutes. This title means this title. If the General Assembly had intended the exemption to apply to anything that the Department of Corrections did, which is I think effectively what the district court was suggesting, it would have said that. It would have said that the CDOC and its executive director have blanket immunity or blanket exemption from APA compliance, but it didn't say that. It refers to this title. Now, the district court did find that the duties that are listed in Title 17, particularly 17.1.103, were broad enough to include the implementation of death penalty by lethal injection. I submit that the district court erred in that regard, and for the same reasons I've already said, there's no reference to carrying out the death penalty. I simply submit that there's something fundamentally, qualitatively, profoundly different between running an institution, a custodial institution, and taking measures against somebody's life.
Let me ask you a question, if I may. The procedures that are contained in Regulation 314 that we can read are argued to be management of a prison, how the team will be trained, who the members of the team will be, media requests, how the death is pronounced, etc. Things that seem to me, maybe not management of the prison, but certainly management of the procedures relating to carrying out the death penalty, very routine sort of things. What I really want to know is, you're not arguing so much for disclosure. We're not really talking about secrecy. This isn't an open records case. It isn't disclosure to the defendant about what drugs they're going to use. That may come later, I suppose, in these proceedings. What is the public's interest, though, and having the right to comment in an APA proceeding on these kind of things, like who how the execution team will be trained, and that sort of thing? What is the public interest under the APA in even commenting on these kinds of things?
Let me answer that two ways. First, the fact that there are some functions identified in AR-314 that may seem more management-related than others does not impact the final conclusion, which is that the essence of this rule is about the implementation of the death penalty by lethal injection. That leads to answer your question, why would the medical community have an interest in knowing what drugs are used, what quantity, how the intravenous tube is placed in, what level of pain the inmate may endure, where we get these drugs? I would submit that those are issues of paramount public importance, and I want to push back a little bit on this notion that it's somehow irrelevant that we're talking about a completely secret process. Had we gone through normal public rulemaking, it couldn't have been a completely secret process distilled down into a restricted access document that nobody can see and nobody knows anything about.
What is the interest in the community of knowing how the drugs are administered?
As a community, I would hope that we care about terminating life in the most humane way possible. And I think that that's a matter of enormous public interest.
So that would go to this restricted document, though, not necessarily to the other provisions of the agreement.
That would at least go to the restricted document to the extent the restricted document's incorporated in. I would say it goes to the overall package of material we're arguing about. I am going to run out of time. I did address the other piece of this, the management and so forth, and I'll just rest on the briefs in light of the time that I've run out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Council.
May it please the court. I'm Chris Alvin. I represent the appellees in this case. As the esteemed counsel for Mr. Dunlap mentioned, there is one issue in this case, and that issue is whether the court was correct in determining that the provisions of the Colorado Department of Corrections administrative regulations relating to the execution of the death penalty, AR 300-14, which was adopted under the chapter of facility security and also pertains to the placement, assignment, management, classification of offenders sentenced under death, whether those provisions are encompassed within the broad categories as set forth in section 17.1.11. The issue is not whether the execution team will administer sodium thiopental or some equally equivalent or effective substance if and when they execute Mr. Dunlap. The issue is not whether Mr. Dunlap, how much pain he will experience if and when he is executed. The issue is not whether DOC, what will DOC do if sodium thiopental is unavailable. Those are issues that can be resolved amongst the other issues mentioned in Mr. Dunlap's briefing at some later time, some later venue. This case is simply about the provisions of AR 300-14 and whether those provisions are encompassed within the broad categories of section 17.1.11.
Are those issues that you say could be later resolved issues that will be discussed or have been discussed in the restricted distribution document?
The record is not clear. There's not the record is not clear on exactly what is discussed within that restricted distribution.
Well, I'll ask the same question I asked Mr. Kilroy. Is there a public interest in commenting on those issues that you just raised and he just raised that would be relevant to whether the APA should be applied to it?
I think that there is public interest in it. But that public interest isn't found in the requiring the Department of Corrections comply with the APA in this issue. That may be for the legislature to decide when enacting the death penalty. That may be for public disclosure, maybe when Mr. Dunlap challenges the constitutionality of the methods of execution, the drugs used to execute him.
Well, counsel, isn't it a bit difficult for Mr. Dunlap to challenge the constitutionality of a procedure that is kept secret from him? He cannot see the restricted distribution document, which we're all assuming, since none of us have actually seen it, relates to the actual injection, what chemicals are used, and those sorts of things. How can they form a meaningful claim constitutionally without knowing what's in that document?
Your Honor, to address your question, I think, upon my information and belief, that information can be obtained by Mr. Dunlap through, let's say, in 42 U.S.C. 1983 claim, whereby maybe the court, and certainly maybe Mr. Dunlap's counsel in that action, maybe through a redacted copy of it, would be provided that copy, and the court would be provided that copy so that it could examine the specific provisions of that restricted document. However, recent events here have shown that there is great need for the department to keep certain things that it does restricted, and that on a kind of a need-to-know basis or confidential basis. Carrying out the death penalty is a very serious matter, and the procedures by which DOC does that is very serious and needs to be confidential. And the part of the legislature, through the enactment of 17.1.1.11, in encompassed within that the executive director's responsibility of carrying out sentences, whether it be a death sentence, a life sentence, sentence to 1 year to the DOC, 5 years. The management of the offender population is excluded from all of the regulations that the department has, is excluded from the APA. And there's nothing different, although the serious nature of this issue is different, there's nothing different about this regulation as opposed to the vast majority of regulations that DOC issues as it relates to the management of the offender population.
So what I hear you saying is that if Mr. Dunlap wants to find out how he's actually going to be executed, he has to file another case, have to have another case where he asks for that information, asserting another legal theory. Then perhaps he gets it. And then if he gets it, he files a case challenging the constitutionality of whatever he finds out. Is that your position?
That is my position, if he hasn't already done so.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, I lost my train.
But that's really the issue that is in front of us, though, is that there should be public comment on these proceedings, right? And that's really all we're talking about. This is not a disclosure case. It's not an open records case. It's not the 1983 case you outlined. But the department has adopted a restricted distribution document that apparently provides procedures and guidelines for carrying out a death sentence by lethal injection, albeit this legislature already said that's how it's going to be done. They haven't described all the procedures like dosage and that sort of thing. Should the public have an interest in commenting on those procedures? Whether or not Mr. Dunlap knows or not, should the public, which seems to be the question before us, under the APA, should the public have a right to comment on those procedures? I think that's the issue.
I would argue no. And first, I would preface my answer. First, I do want to make clear that the Department of Corrections does not concede that, one, this restricted distribution document is in fact a rule under the APA, nor does it concede that it's somehow encompassed and incorporated within AR 300-14. However, I would say that this document, even if it were, would still be encompassed under the exemption provided by the legislature in section 17.1.11. And so the legislature has decided that this type of issue, dealing with management, classification, assignment of offenders, is exempted from the public procedural requirements of the APA.
Now, the district court found that the regulation, I presume the entire regulation, was a rule for purposes of the APA. Isn't that correct?
That is correct.
And I think the court even went further and said there didn't even seem to be any dispute about that. But I'm hearing now that you're not conceding that.
I'm not conceding it. However, I would acknowledge that the court found that, almost demonstrating that whether or not it's a rule is immaterial. What was material is whether, even given that it is a rule, it still is encompassed within the exemptions provided by statute.
Well, it's material. If it weren't a rule, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be talking about this.
However, I would argue that as it relates to the management of offenders, the executive director has great discretion and can adopt regulations relating to that discretion and relating to that management. And is it fully exempted from all of that through 17.1.11? And so whether it's a rule, whether it's not a rule, in my view, is almost immaterial. And I would also like to note, Judge Jones, that your point was well taken. Every offender, no matter what they're sentenced to the Department of Corrections, whether it be 1 year, 5 years, life, death, the enabling statute giving the executive director the authority to house and manage that offender during its time of incarceration is found within Title 18. Among the provisions of Title 17 are the provisions of 17.1.103, which provide the executive director with great discretion and the responsibility of the overall management and operation of the department. Encompassed within that responsibility is the responsibility to manage this offender population and to give effects to the criminal sentences that are imposed by the courts. To that end, the executive director may issue regulations relating to time computation, classification, offender discipline, placement, housing. And as part of that responsibility, the executive director issued AR 300-14 relating to the death penalty.
Yes, but he also said there's going to be restricted distribution documents to provide procedures, which none of us have seen. The statute says that the death penalty should be carried out by a continuous intravenous injection of a lethal quantity of sodium, I'm not sure I can remember, whatever, sodium thiopental. Who decides what a lethal quantity of sodium thiopental is? This restricted distribution document, presumably? The director through this document?
That's a very good question. I would say the medical staff thoroughly trained to do the injections would make that medical determination.
Should the public have a right to comment on what constitutes a lethal quantity?
I would argue that the public, as it relates to this case, I would argue no. That the carrying out of the death sentence, although a serious subject, is still encompassed within the broad categories of 17.1.11. And so the legislature has already decided that no, the public should not weigh in. There are other avenues where the public can and do weigh in, whether it be through another case, it's not this case, or whether it be through the legislature. I would also note that many of the provisions of Administrative Regulation 300-14 are already found in statute. Mr. Dunlap's counsel pointed out to a lot of things, almost eliminating any need for the executive director to issue this administrative regulation. The district court below properly found that the broad provisions of 17.1.11 encompassed the provisions found in Administrative Regulation 300-14. The district court relied on the term management of inmates. However, looking at just the plain language of the administrative regulation, certainly many of the other terms set forth in statute are encompassed within those. I'd like to just address briefly opposing counsel's citation to the legislative history of 17.1.11. In statutory construction, the court must first look at the plain language of the statute to determine the legislative intent. If that meaning is clear and unambiguous, then the court can go ahead and apply the plain meaning of the statute. There's no need to look to the legislative history here. The district court properly found that and did not consider the legislative history and found that the provisions of 17.1.11 were clear and applied to AR 300-14. That decision should be affirmed. If there are no other questions, I will end my time.
I just have one question. I've asked it three times already, but I'm just not sure. Does the restrictive distribution document actually exist, or is it something that will be prepared? Can you even tell me that?
I can tell you that I am not on a need-to-know basis. So I have not seen the document. However, I do believe that it does exist.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fuller.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments this morning. The case will stand submitted. We'll issue an opinion in due course. Before I announce the recess, I'd like to acknowledge this morning the presence of Judge Plank, who is sitting on division, longtime Denver District and Court of Appeals judge, and we're pleased to have him here. That the bailiff may announce recess.